This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
A very warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. As ever, it's a pleasure to have your company as myself, Dave Kellner, and Dave Tindall get ready to talk golf. Two good events this week as well, the Omega Dubai Desert Classic on the European Tour and the Farmers Insurance Open on the PGA Tour. A warm welcome. Good morning to you, Dave Tindall.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm looking forward to this week. It's always got the feel of the start of the US season, doesn't it, with the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. It's a little bit different with the absence of Tiger Woods this week, I guess, to a certain extent, but it's a really good event, and we're in the middle of the Middle East swing on the European Tour as well, so we've got two top tournaments, so I'm looking forward to watching them both this week, in all honesty.
Yeah, I've got that slight feeling as well. It's like, for the first time on both tours, it's like a big proper event and you think, yeah, here we go. This is like really getting stuck into it now. So hopefully we can find a winner or two.
Fingers crossed. Let's talk about last week before we get stuck into the betting for this week then. We had what we wanted going into the Sunday at Abu Dhabi with Rory McIlroy, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood, 1, 2 and 3. And in all honesty, Hatton destroyed them, elite performance, and he's now won four times on tour since Rory McIlroy grabbed his last win. Do we read anything into that? Hatton never really in danger coming into the back nine on Sunday.
Well, I think we do read something into that because you have to be honest about this, and Hatton has got different gears to Rory McIlroy these days in final rounds. I was just having a look through Hatton's wins. He's got 6 on the European Tour now. Look at his final round. So 66 when he won his first Alfred Dunhill, 66 again when he defended it, 65 when he won the Italian Open, 67 when he won the Turkish Airlines Open, 67 when he won at Wentworth in October, and then 66 here. So he can just go through the gears in the final round. And this is something Rory repeatedly cannot do anymore. So, I mean, who do you trust more? If you're having a bet in running and they're sort of similarly priced and similarly placed on the scoreboard, it's Hatton all day at the minute.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a bit of an overreaction to say for those that have said that is kind of it for Rory McIlroy now and he won't win a major championship again. But
That's silly.
Yeah, that's silly, isn't it? Is McIlroy at all a victim of his own success in the early part of his career, or do you think he's underachieved or overachieved, McIlroy?
Well, it's difficult because it depends what length of time you're judging him over. You could say he overachieved at the start, and then although at the time it didn't seem he was overachieving, it just seemed like he was the heir to Tiger Woods, and he would go on and get a double-digit amount of majors, but maybe he was overachieving then and now it's reverted to the mean a little bit. But, well, four majors for, what is he, 31?
Yeah.
That was a good golf left. Got the nappy factor to kick in as well, obviously. it's because there's that big gap, but, I mean, as Tiger proved, you can go a long time between majors.
Yeah.
He puts himself in position enough times for big wins, and it'll go his way at some point, but just quite a few times. It doesn't. I wasn't particularly surprised because that was his first event back. I think if there are signs of rust, it's all very well him coming out and shooting a great score in round one. That can happen. People do that. And it's when it really, you're under the gun. That's when you're really testing how your game and confidence is. So the first start of the week of the year for McIlroy, I thought that was fair enough. He couldn't turn it on, but I think he will.
Yeah, I think it's just the fact that he went birdie-birdie to start round four, didn't he? And he looked in command of the golf tournament at that point, and then Hatton just roared into life. And he closed things out on the front nine, really, Tyrrell Hatton. Superb performance from him. And he's inside the top five for the first time in his career as well. There's no doubting Hatton's ability, but you look at, they're almost intangibles with Hatton, aren't they? Because you look at his game and you think, what does he do well? And it's the wedge game and the putting, really, that separates him from the rest, isn't it? He's not going to overpower a golf course necessarily.
Yeah. And did you sort of have a little think about, you know, that fantastic European Tour video they did about the thumbs up and the being angry? I just wonder if that, because it was so fresh in his mind, did it just sort of help a little bit that he could sort of completely self-deprecate at times? I don't know.
I'm not sure about that, because apparently that video was 2 years in the making, so I'm not sure when the different parts of it were filmed, in all honesty.
Yeah, right.
So that's been in the pipeline a long time, but the European Tour do a wonderful job with that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was brilliant. But it was, obviously, it was the sort of buzz, wasn't it, of the social media. And they were obviously actually doing it, carrying it out in that tournament. Hatton did it. Matt Wallace did it. I think it's just brilliant that you can take the mick out of yourself like that. I honestly did watch that and think, we'll win the Ryder Cup now, because that can't happen in an American camp.
On the other side of the pond, speaking of America, Siwoo Kim showed his affinity for Pete Dijkhorst when winning the American Express last week. What a Sunday performance to hold off a charging Patrick Cantlay, who shot 18 under over the weekend, almost pulled off that cutline Friday to win Sunday feat, Cantlay. But Siwoo Kim, again, Pete Dye design, goes well, wins the golf tournament, and he played fantastically well on Saturday and Sunday, just flagged everything. And it was always going to be about whether Siwoo Kim could hole the putts on Sunday to win the tournament, but his ball striking was that good, he didn't even have to be in full command on the greens to win.
Yeah, he certainly likes a Pete Dye. I know there's a few of us who in the golf betting community who were on him at Hilton Head that time when he somehow lost, when he couldn't hold the putts. But he does certainly like Pete Dye's Bermuda greens. So, yeah, that was one. Well, probably both last week, because Hatton has a great record in the desert. They were both in the category of one that got away, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. All the talk on Sunday after the final round was about Tony Finau. A lot of it, anyway, dominated the Twitter conversation. It's obviously something of a travesty that he's only won once on tour, and it was in Puerto Rico as well. He still only had officially, according to the betting, a 1-in-4 chance going into that final round, but his back nine isn't necessarily what you would have wanted. And are there more reservations over Tony Finau getting the job done than McIlroy at the moment?
Well, yeah, obviously Finau has got this body of poor work, as it were, in final rounds and stuff. But you've got to kind of look at what he produces as a whole. And Tony Finau is still always going to be a good bet in a major where his price is bigger than it is normally. And he just seems to, you know, that seems to play his best golf in those big major events. I think he can have another good year in the majors. I don't know, I have this little inkling that somehow his next win will be a major.
Okay. But
I don't know. He might go out a little bit early and post a number, something like that. But again, like with McIlroy, you don't give up on players like that. He's so talented, Tony Finau.
Let's talk about this week then. As mentioned at the top of the podcast, two huge events this week. And we'll start with the Omega Dubai Desert Classic on the European Tour. Tyrrell Hatton heads the betting here at 7-1 after last week's win. Tommy Fleetwood is 10-1. Colin Morikawa in the betting at 12s. Matthew Fitzpatrick 14-1. Matt Wallace in the market at 22s. Paul Casey 22s. Christian Bezuidenhout is 22-1. Sergio Garcia 25s. Robert McIntyre 28-1. Andy Sullivan and Shane Lowry both 30s. 33-1 and bigger the rest of them. And we're over to the Emirates Golf Club for the second week of this Middle East swing. And the Majlis course is a little shorter than last week's test in Abu Dhabi. And it's kind of tricky to know exactly what to expect this week, because last year, Dave, Lucas Herbert won with a total of 9 under par, whereas the previous year, Bryson DeChambeau came over and won with a 24 under par total. And the year before that, Hao Tong Li won with 23 under. What changed last year, first of all, Dave, to make the scoring significantly more difficult?
Yeah, it seemed to be that the greens were very firm and fast, and it was just hard to hold them. And We did get a very different winning score than normal, but I've read a couple of things. It seems to be more back to maybe what we normally expect to some extent. I think last year might just be an outlier possibly.
Yeah, thicker rough and stronger winds than we were accustomed to last year. And looking at the forecast, it's supposed to be pretty benign, particularly over the first 3 days. And then the wind picks up on Sunday. But as we always say on this podcast, do check closer to the time, because even though Tyrrell Hatton and Rory McIlroy finished 1-2 last week, the draw wasn't as big a factor as was made out maybe on Tuesday and Wednesday in the lead up to the event. So the stronger winds might not materialise this week in Dubai. What do you make to Tyrrell Hatton? I'm guessing he's not a player for you at 7-1, but I must admit, I was tempted to go back in with Hatton this week. I think he's got an outstanding chance.
Yeah, he's won back-to-back before, hasn't he? Big events before. Was it the Dunhill and the Italian Open? I think he won back-to-back. So he can do it. Yeah, often when someone's going for back-to-back, you look at how much under the gun they were the week before. I'm not sure the focus was fully on it. I know he was up there, but I think everyone was looking at Rory, to be honest, last week. And Hatton was just sort of coming along for the ride a little bit slightly. The one that, you know, I think it was just Rory, wasn't it? People were thinking, oh, this is Rory's, and Hatton was up there. But I don't think the way he separated himself on Sunday and got it done quick, I think it was just all positive vibes from Hatton. I don't think he left that tournament exhausted or anything. Yeah, so he could go in again at 7-1. It's just not a particularly exciting price, but I don't know. If you were maybe looking at some sort of double on the American tour, you'd be happy to put him in as for the European leg.
Yeah, he's not my... I have gone for one towards the top of the betting, but not Tyrrell Hatton this week. I've got a couple of selections for this event, Dave. How about you?
Yeah, two as well for me.
Okay, shall I lead off this week?
You go, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Colin Morikawa. I'm in danger of turning into a bit of a fanboy with Morikawa. But if anyone can win this on his tournament debut, I think it is Morikawa. And having picked him to win in Hawaii at the Tournament of Champions, and just missing out when he faltered on Sunday and finished seventh in the end, I'm going back to the well here. And that came on the back of the 10th place in the DP World Tour Championship. Since then, he's finished seventh again in Hawaii at the Sony Open, comes into this fresh after a week off, and he's got just the game you have to have historically that's required for this venue. He's a greens and regulation machine, and surely he'll go well if the putter cooperates. And I've said this before about Morikawa, but I think the slightly slower greens aid him, and they aren't the quickest in Dubai at the Majlis courses compared to some of the other courses on the Middle East swing. So I think he's got to go close this week, and I'm going win only with Morikawa as well at 12-1. I expect him to win shortly, and this week looks like the perfect venue. So he's my one of my two bets this week, Morikawa at 12-1. I fancy him this week, Dave.
Yeah, I think Morikawa's got every chance. I've got a bet as well. My first bet is in the top half dozen in the betting. Matt Wallace at 22-1. World number 49, so he's in that all-important top 50. He had a good start last week in Abu Dhabi, tied seventh, which is the best he's done at that course. It's not one he's always of the Middle East and a bunch of courses. It's the one where he hasn't been too hot on. But just winding back a couple of starts before that, in the Golf in Dubai Championship, he was tied second, so that underlined his better form. I read an article a couple of weeks ago with Kit Alexander where they interviewed Matt Wallace ahead of Abu Dhabi, and I did make a note: don't back him for Abu Dhabi, do back him for Dubai, and I'm going to stick with that theory. He said last week about this course, it suits my eye nicely. I know the course really well from doing practice there and prep there for many years. It's a great course and amazing facilities, which is all well and good, but obviously, can he play it? Yes, he can, because he was runner-up 2 years ago. He's really, really keen, isn't he, to get on that Ryder Cup team, having missed out, and I think he's put down a nice start last week. And I'm just sticking with what I originally thought. I thought as long as he's not some ridiculously short price last week, I didn't want him to finish, you know, runner-up and be going off at 14s this week. But 22-1 on Matt Wallace is fine. I think he's such a confident bloke, isn't he? I think he absolutely loves Dubai. he started the year well, got the course form, and he's another one who's got that self-deprecation element, which I was a bit surprised by him, because sometimes you wonder, oh, do they really get on? But he was really taking the mick out of himself with his kind of reputation for having to go at his paddy. I think all good for Matt Wallace, and I expect a big challenge.
Okay, Matt Wallace at 22-1 is Dave's first player here. My second selection is Adrian Aus at 45-1. I mentioned the slower greens for Morikawa. They've got the potential to aid Adrian Aus too, given it's plain to see that the putting is what's holding him back. I thought he looked at a fair each-way price this week. His last two starts have yielded finishes of a tie for 10th and a tie for 12th, and both have come in this part of the world as well, with the aforementioned 10th at the DP World Tour Championship, the 12th coming last week at Abu Dhabi. Had a couple of bogey-free rounds last week as well, which shows his game is in very good order. He's finished 29th and 3rd here in two starts, and I think he looks a good week each-way bet here at 45-1. Adrian Aus, my second selection this week, Dave.
Yeah, I've had a few Spanish winners, haven't we, in Dubai? I think Jimenez.
Garcia.
Kiros, she won there as well, didn't they? So, yeah, they like the hot weather, hot, dry conditions. So, yeah, I like that. I'm actually going in again at 22-1 on Christian Buzwedenhout for my second bet.
Can see that.
Yeah, he's just been in fantastic form, hasn't he? Last five starts worldwide, all top 15s. That includes a pair of wins in South Africa, his homeland, Alfred Dunhill Championship, and the South African Open. And he played the DP World Tour Championship straight after those two wins. And obviously, maybe it was asking a bit much for him to win again. But another fine performance, tied 14th. And then he started out in Abu Dhabi last week and was tied 12th. So he's kept it going. Buzwedenhout. And he was the runner-up here last year. I suppose the only doubt over that is that it came in tougher conditions. And does he prefer it when it's slightly tough? Maybe, but I think he's just a great golfer. I think he can win in various conditions. So I think he's definitely one to keep on the right side of Buzwedenhout. I think I might have said maybe last week that, or sometime on the podcast, he's worth looking the majors this year because he's some big old prices. But 22-1 on a player absolutely at the top of his game in great form, runner up on the course last year. I thought, again, if he goes and challenges or wins, I'd kick myself. So, 22-1 Buzwedenhout.
Very good. Two selections apiece then in the event. Any others you want to mention? A couple that caught my eye at bigger prices. Laurie Kanter, who I was with last week. He missed the cut last week. 80-1, drives the ball well. I just expect big things from Kanter. He's 80s, which is worth a look for me. And Wilco Nienaber, 80-1. As well. I also looked at Sami Välimäki, who's drifted in the market on the back of one average week. He's 66-1. Those were three that caught my bigger prices.
Yeah, I did have a quick look at Victor Dubuisson because he can suddenly pop up from nowhere. And, you know, how often does he play? But it's actually the last three starts, 9th in the Scottish Open, 32nd at Wentworth, and 25th in Abu Dhabi last week. He's definitely played well in the desert before, probably mostly in the season end, the DP World Tour Championship. So I thought, oh, well, I presume he's got a good record in this event, but he hasn't actually, which scuppered me completely. Four miscuts, 31st and 38th. So I'm not quite sure why that is, given that he's played well in other desert events, but he's 125-1 again. I thought he might be a crazy price, maybe 200 or something, so. Slightly put off there. I think you mentioned the ones I was looking at in terms of outsiders further down the betting. Andy Sullivan would be another one near the top end at 30-1. And what about Victor Perez? We were sort of all over him last week and in the previous desert event. Are you not as keen this time?
Yeah, I mean, you went for him last week, didn't you? And I wasn't as keen on him. I was keen on more keen on the guys that I've mentioned. I think Adrian Aus is a fine play at 45-1 this week. I think it'll be interesting to see how some of those guys that have drifted in the betting bounce back. The likes of Martin Kaymer was really popular last week, wasn't he? At around about 28-1. He's out to 35-1 now. And Bob McIntyre, 28-1 as well. Drives the ball so well. Should be a nice setup for this course where you... it's kind of positional, where you've got to put the ball in play off the tee and then attack from there.
Yeah, just on Perez, I think maybe some of his kind of the obvious form lines have been hidden a little bit, because last year he was 16th, and that included a final round 79, 29th on debut in 2019. And even last week when he was 46, that was kind of ruined a little bit by a 76 in round four. So you take out those round fours, you know, he's by no means a bad round four player, but he just happens to have one last week and one in this event last year, then you could easily be presenting him with much better credentials on first look, and maybe a bit shorter, but 33-1 if you fancy him.
I guess he's had a couple of events like that, hasn't he, Perez? Because remember in the DP World Tour Championship, where he was in contention going into the third round on Saturday and had kind of a mini meltdown. I'm not saying it's going to be a factor going forward, but it's worth considering he's had a few events like that now where he's had one round in the mid-70s, and it's easy just to cast that aside and say, well, these things happen, but if they keep happening, it becomes an issue, I suppose.
Yeah, I think there's enough stuff there. I mean, in Abu Dhabi last year, not rather than last week, he shot a 63 in round four to finish second.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's by no means kind of got scar tissue that would put you off.
Should we move on to the other event this week?
Yes.
The Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines is the PGA Tour event, and John Rahm heads the betting at 7-1, Rory McIlroy 8-1, Xander Schauffele is 12-1, Tony Finau 20-1, Harris English is 22s, Patrick Reed 25-1, Sung Jae Im is 28, Victor Hovland 28, Hideki Matsuyama 28-1, Matthew Wolff and Brooks Koepka and Mark Leishman and Scotty Scheffler all 33-1 and 35-1 and bigger. The remainder, an event we always, I think, look forward to this one at Torrey Pines. Tiger Woods not here. He's recuperating. Hopefully he'll be back soon. And John Rahm and Rory McIlroy are the two taking that massive chunk out of the market. Both would have solid enough chances on a course, a pair of courses really, that suit their game. And Torrey Pines has hosted this championship for many a year, and both the North and South course are in operation. The North course is the easier of the pair, but has been toughened up a little over the last few years, while the South course, which will be used exclusively for the weekend, is a real test. Very long, measures just under 7,800 yards. That's about 500 yards longer than the North course, which is significant. And it's also worth considering that San Diego is at sea level, so the ball doesn't fly that far, especially on the morning with the sea mist rolling in. It can be seriously tough. There are outliers to this, such as Brant Snedeker, who in his prime has a ridiculously good short game. But I'd personally think long and hard about backing a player that is on the shorter side off the tee. That's my personal thought this week going into the Farmers Insurance Open. Dave, is there anything that stands out to you when analysing this event?
Yeah, in theory, it should suit the big hitters. And you've got to think, because it's held in the US Open later in the year, how tough will they have it right now? I did have a look back to 2008, actually, the last time it held the US Open, just to see how the regular tour event had gone there that season. I think the thing I noticed was quite a lot of Aussies did well. Not quite sure whether that was a coincidence. I think Aussies will play well here always. Leishman's the defending champion. I think he said on these sort of in conditions, the grasses. I always can't get out of my mind how Rocco Media nearly beat Tiger Woods on this course, really long course, in 2008 when he in theory had no chance.
As far as major championships are concerned, Dave, as well, that's one that will stand the test of time, won't it? You'll remember that in 40 years' time.
Oh, incredible. Just the fact, I mean, Tiger was, never mind he was on one leg, he had to hold a 15-footer, didn't he, or 12-footer, just to get into a playoff.
Yeah, and it's funny when Rocco Media talks about that, you know, in the aftermath, and you see the when there are clips compiled from the event and there's documentaries made, Media just, it's how definitive he is in his assessment that he knew, I know in hindsight you can say this, but he knew Tiger Woods was going to hold that putt.
Oh, yeah, he's just sort of smiling and nodding that, yep, that was going to happen. That's fine. You know, he wasn't caught out on any level. So, yeah, so I wouldn't, if you absolutely fancied a shorter hitter based on media, based on Snedeker, I wouldn't, you know, think, oh, well, that's impossible. That's put me off completely. But, yeah, I think the longer hitters on the, is it the longest course on the PGA Tour now, this one?
Is it the longest now? I know it's definitely one of the longest. It might be the actual longest golf course on the It's not only that; it's just the greens are so small here, aren't they? As well. So if you are, I know if you are short and offline, just finding these greens is next to impossible, isn't it? Basically.
Yeah, that's the problem. I think maybe in the US Open when it does come around, there's a theory that it could be another kind of bomb and gouge, and it might suit Bryson DeChambeau just to. You know, you're coming out of thick rough, but further up the fairway. But I think it's a little bit more open this week.
Yeah, and the only thing that about that, just to, I mean, I made the point that I would be with longer hitters here, but if I was making a case for a shorter hitter, Alex Noren has said in the past that if you do stray offline, there are running areas at Torrey Pines, and I think that will be more of a factor, significant factor, when we talk about the US Open later in the year, when you've got fast, firm conditions where you might be able to run the ball into the greens. Whereas this week, it's likely to play a little bit softer, and that might not be as much of a possibility.
Yeah, the weird thing, when I was looking at 2008 and the US Open, it was how many of those players, apart from Tiger, had an absolutely terrible record in this event.
Oh, that's bizarre.
So you kind of, if you use that kind of logic, if you think McIlroy and Rahm are going to do well in the US Open, don't back them this week. It's a sort of reverse kind of logic. But it was a weird one. It was just like, it's a completely different set of characters apart from Tiger who were on that leaderboard. An interesting week. I've got two picks.
What do you make to Rahm and McIlroy?
Yeah, well, do we overplay jet lag sometimes? I mean, that's a long old journey, that, isn't it, from the desert and the time zone. But he's obviously played well here before. Rahm, is he still betting in the new clubs that we can trust him?
Yeah, I think
I don't personally fancy them, to be honest.
No, I think another factor with Rahm is that he withdrew last week, didn't he? I've not seen any official reports, but I've heard rumours that was because he sustained a minor injury in the gym. So that would be another thing to consider with. You want the stars to be aligned if you're thinking about backing a player at 7 or 8 to 1, don't you, basically? And there are enough doubts about Rahm and McIlroy. McIlroy's not won for a couple of years now. Enough doubts about that pair at the prices. I would, if I had to select one, if a gun was put to my head, I'd be backing Rahm over McIlroy at a point shorter, personally.
Yeah, I'm not particularly close to backing either of them, to be honest.
I've just got the one pick. You've got two, so you can go ahead and lead off here, Dave.
Yep, I'm going to lead off with Adam Scott.
Very close for me at 45s.
Yeah, 45 to 1. I thought that's a nice price on Adam Scott. As I briefly touched on there, back in 2008 in the regular event before the US Open, there was Appleby, Sendon, Green, Badley, Elkington, all up there. Aussies do play well here, and Adam Scott added to that on his only performance, only appearance in this event in 2019 when he came in and finished runner-up. He had played the US Open in 2008 and finished tied 26, which was decent, but in this event, yeah, first go, runner-up, excellent. He's just very, very good, isn't he, on the West Coast? I've got his last five events on the West Coast, 22nd in the PGA, then he won Riviera last year, 17th Safeway Open, 7th US Open 2019. I was at Pebble, I think, Gary Woodland's year.
Yeah.
And then 7th again at the Genesis. You only go two tournaments further back, and he's runner-up in the Farmers Insurance, and then he's got another second at Riviera. So he just plays very well on the West Coast, often without a run, but this year he has got a couple of events under his belt, played both events in Hawaii. Nothing special there, 21st and 41st. But in the Sony, he started off 69-64 which was good. Closed with a 66. Obviously, scoring was good there. And I think that obviously the worry people might have are, what did he do at the Sony? Did he strike it brilliantly and was just terrible with the putter? Well, not at all, actually. He actually had a positive strokes gained putting figure. And he was just excellent off the tee. I think being excellent off the tee was good. He gained 5 strokes off the tee, second in that ranking. But putts well on Poana. It's really good at this time of the year on these West Coast courses. So I thought Adam Scott, 45-1, was a good price. When he just...
Yeah, 45-1, Adam Scott. Definitely, I think, worth a look this week at that sort of price. Especially, I was half tempted by Jason Day at 35-1 as well, Dave, this week, given he's won the tournament twice. He's left TaylorMade, hasn't he, Jason Day? So he's not actually tied down to an official manufacturer at the moment. So he's picking and choosing his equipment now, which is interesting. I wouldn't worry too much about Jason Day's lack of recent play, because he's been known to prep for Torrey Pines in this way down the years as well, where he has a couple of weeks at a private resort and then comes here fully refreshed and ready to go. So he was another Aussie that I was tempted by Jason Day anyway this week.
Yeah, definitely. All what you've said there, yeah.
I'm going with Matthew Wolff as my sole selection at 33-1 this week. Californian, looks primed for a big run at the title, in my opinion. I thought we might get a little bit of a bigger price based on the tie for 40th on his seasonal reappearance in the American Express, but I'm not surprised he's been relatively well found in the market. He's already shown in his career so far that he puts best on Poana greens and that he relishes a huge layout like Torrey Pines provides. His best form has come at Harding Park and winged foot in 2 major championships, 2 decent tests that favour the longer hitter. And even though Morikawa won at Harding Park, a real driving test like this one does suit Matthew Wolff, and he can spring to life at any moment, and he showed his suitability for this course with a tie for 21st last year. Superb effort, given he opened with a 76. Last week, should have shaken off the rust. I do expect Wolff to produce this week, so he's my sole selection for the event. Matthew Wolff each way at 33-1 there.
Yeah, absolutely. Perhaps if I'd had a third pick, it would have been Wolff. So all aboard that. I certainly agree with that. I'm not straying too far further down with my second pick. I'm going to go for Bubba Watson.
Yeah.
At 40-1. There might be some people, before they look at anything, who just say, well, he hasn't played since the Masters and he was no good there. But a couple of things on that. I think the Masters threw him because it wasn't the normal Masters. I think Bubba likes familiarity and comfort. I think it kind of got to him a little bit that it was played in November and the visuals weren't the same because of the flowers and everything. I think it just messed with him a little bit. And once it started to go a little bit wrong, I don't think it was quite there for him to get it back. He was just a bit phased. He did make the cut and shot a final round 78 to make it look worse than it was. But before that, he was playing quite nicely. 4th in the Zozo, 7th in the CJ Cup. Obviously, the other thing with that, as he's not played since the Masters, is he too rusty? But I don't think he is. I recall this and I double-checked it. When he won the 2014 Masters, he hadn't played for a month. And his previous start, he'd shot an 83 and withdrawn. So Bubba, because he's so unique, he never had a lesson in his life. I think he doesn't need to groove it as well as everyone else. And he showed that last year. This was his first event of the year last year, and he was 6th, came out straight out, finished 6th. And that built on some excellent previous course form here. He won it in 2011, 7th in 2009, 4th in 2007. You may think, oh, that's a bit old form, but for whatever reason, he didn't play this event between 2014 and last year. So it's traditionally one of his favourites. I'm not quite sure why he then knocked it off his schedule. But when he did put it back on last year, immediately came out and finished 6th. Obviously, he's another one who puts really well, plays really well on Poana. He's won at Riviera a couple of times, hasn't he, on the West Coast. So I think Bubba's slightly a forgotten man, with Bubba still one of the absolute elite drivers of the golf ball, long and straight. You look at his strokes gained off the tee figures, they're just in the top 10 every week. tee to green all the time. So if he can just hold his own with the putter, I think Bubba's got a big chance here at 40-1. Again, the very basic strategy with Bubba, you back him somewhere where he's won before. So I thought 40-1 was fine.
Yeah, 40-1, Bubba Watson, I can see that. Who came closest other than the three we've mentioned? I'd liked Ryan Palmer, actually, this week. I thought he could go well. He's 50-1, which you've got to kind of recalibrate your thinking with Palmer, haven't you, at a certain time, because he's just in the form of his career at this age, Ryan Palmer. Fourth at the Zozo, fourth at the Tournament of Champions in Hawaii, then tied for 41st at the Sony Open. But his form at this golf course is really strong, Ryan Palmer. He's had a chance to win a couple of times in three starts at the venue, including on debut in 2018. I think this is the sort of golf course that he likes. Really good driver of the golf ball. So Ryan Palmer was one that tempted me.
Yeah, I suppose his lack of a win for absolutely years is a worry for that kind of price, although, you know, there's plenty of each-way juice in it. I had a slight feeling for a couple of players, maybe on the comeback trail. Gary Woodland at 66-1. You know, in theory, this course really suits him. When his US Open at Pebble Beach, came back to form last week. The other one, again, he's a player I'm waiting to come back to form. Ricky Fowler, who, again, he's vanished off the face of the earth a little bit, but he was 21st in the American Express last week. And what I found interesting was his stats, because they maybe were the opposite to what you were thinking. Third off the tee, fourth tee to green. Now, he's been struggling in those categories, especially tee to green, for quite a while now, but maybe something's clicked there. He was also first around the green, so the short game. The only thing that let him down was the putter, ironically, seeing as we have him down as one of the best around. So he was negative strokes gained putting. Ricky Fowler won 21st. What I think stops me from having a bet on him this week is, even though he's a California kid and you think he's got great form on the West Coast, he just hasn't. He started his career well here. Mm-hmm. You look at some of his finishes between 2010 and 13. He's got a 5th, a 6th, a 13th, and a 20th. But I don't know what's happened in recent time. Well, maybe because he's moved to Florida, maybe he's forgotten what to do, but 5 missed cuts in his last 7 appearances here. So I am keeping an eye on Ricky Fowler, but I think maybe not for this event, though, just because of that course form. And I think it is an event where I would value and rate course form higher than maybe most weeks.
Okay, that's interesting. Any of the others at the top of the betting catcher eye? Xander Schauffele 12-1. Tony Finau 20-1. I mean, you couldn't design a better golf course for Finau, as far as I'm concerned, at 20s. And no one's going to be backing Finau, I don't think, at 20-1 this week. But it was tempting for me.
Well, you say no one. I mean, if each way betting's your thing and you're backing a 20-1 shot and he's landed it 3 times in his last 4 appearances at this course, which he has, it's not daft, is it? Not too daft.
It's well worth noting as well, top price guaranteed on the top 10 in the market for the Farmers Insurance Open here with William Hill. Plus, we are paying 8 places as well. So with those terms, you could easily see Tony Finau going well at 20s.
Yeah, I feel there is a market for Finau in some level to play him this week. Maybe top 5 or something like that. Maybe if you just can't be doing with backing him to win and then just getting disappointed. But you could back him top 5, maybe.
Yeah, no, I agree. Any others you want to mention just before we wrap it up here?
I did look at Leishman as another Aussie at 33-1, but he's defending. Maybe that's the price combined with the...
He's a bit short, isn't he, at 33-1?
Extra element of defending, yeah, means 33-1. I thought a better Aussie might be Cameron Smith at 50s.
Yeah.
He's definitely one who I looked at, Cameron Smith, runner-up in the Masters, of course. And he played this event last year. Well, no, 2 years ago. He's played it a few times. He's got a 20th... in 2018, 9th in 2019. So a couple of good runs at the course. Not so good at the Sony and the Tournament of Champions, which maybe takes the edge off a little bit. But 4th in the Zozo on his last trip to California. There's enough elements there to think he might do well. I guess maybe you would be put off by the fact he doesn't hit it as far as you might want, maybe.
Yeah, he'd definitely be in the Snedeker mould, wouldn't he? Because he's just got such an incredible short game, Cameron Smith, that if you are going to be backing one, you want to back one that's got a short game like his.
Yeah, I think he can compensate for that. Obviously, to finish runner-up at the Masters shows that he can play well on a longer course, but we are very long this week, and obviously, if you do find the rough, there wasn't much rough, was there, obviously, at Augusta.
Yeah.
So it could be difficult for him this week. But no, I'm happy with my two sort of medium-range shots.
Let's wrap it up then, Mr. Tindall. Give us your selections for this week with the staking plan.
Yeah, so I'm going to put a point each way on all four of mine. So that's in the Dubai Desert Classic, 22-1 Christian Buswedenhout and Matt Wallace, both 22s, as I say. And then in the Farmers Insurance, Bubba Watson at 40s and Adam Scott at 45. So a point each way, that's on all four, that 8 points overall.
I'll just recap that in America, because just cut out slightly there. Bubba Watson and Adam Scott, the two selections for Dave, at 45-1 and 40-1 in the Farmers Insurance. I'm going with three selections this week across the two events, starting with the Dubai Desert Classic. 2 points win Colin Morikawa at 12-1, a point each way Adrian Out at 45-1. And in the Farmers Insurance Open, Matthew Wolf a point each way at 33-1, my sole selection. Dave, thank you for your company.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Looking forward to this week.
I am too. Hopefully you've all enjoyed the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and offer feedback, as long as it's constructive and not critical, at D. Kellner.
Why not? We can if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm only joking. You can offer any feedback you want at D. Kellner, at Dave Tindall Golf, the two Twitter handles if you want to get in touch with us. And check out the betting at williamhill.com and on the app for the Dubai Desert Classic and the Farmers Insurance Open. And don't forget, in the Farmers Insurance Open, we are top price guaranteed on the top 10 in the betting, and we're paying 8 places each way here with William Hill. Thank you for your company, and we'll speak again next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.